Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Ed Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBona. We are here for episode 10.
Number 10. Ben, we made it.
We made it. It has gone by quickly.
It has, very quickly. And we couldn't have done it without you, listeners, so thanks for tuning in.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me before you said listeners.
No, like, listeners.
Yeah, you're right. You couldn't have done it without me.
Thanks for tuning in.
I'm the brains behind this operation.
Listeners. Somebody once told me, actually, like yesterday,
yeah.
Somebody once told me yesterday. I tried to listen to your podcast, but you and Ben keep talking over each other.
So, oh, nice.
But that's our thing.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't. Yeah, we do. You know, we got a unique style, and not everyone's going to like it.
No.
And that's fine.
I threw something at them and then kicked them.
Good.
And that friendship is over.
Well, yeah. I mean, if they're not going to listen to the Sci-Fi Christian, give me one reason why we're going to be friends with you.
Bringing you theology.
There are none.
At warp speed.
There are none. Oh, did we say that? Or did you forget?
No, I did.
Okay, cool. Okay. We got an awesome show here for you guys tonight on our 10th episode.
Yes.
A very philosophical show.
Brought to you by popular demand. We are going to be talking about the movie Adjustment Bureau and then also diving into fate versus free will and everything in between.
Yes, if you've seen the movie, it is a very philosophical and theological experience.
It is.
So it's right up our alley, Sci-Fi Christian. We got a sci-fi movie that dives right into Christian themes.
But let's say you're listening and you're like, oh, I'm not going to listen to this episode. I never saw the movie. I don't want to be spoiled. Well, we're not going to spoil you.
Matt will throw something at you and kick you and your friendship will be over.
If what?
Well, I mean, that's what you just said you did to the last person who went listening.
Oh, no. No, we're not going to spoil anything in the movie. Yes. We're going to talk about some of the themes that come up, but we're not going to actually go too deep into the actual storyline. We want to talk about the overall theme of fate versus free will.
Yes, and if we do any spoilers, we will give an appropriate warning, and you can turn off your iPod for 30 seconds or just get over it.
So feel free to listen completely, as this will be a wonderful episode. I don't know.
Here. Yeah. I'm patting myself on the back a little bit since that's apparently what we're doing. But yeah, it's going to be a great episode. Well, should we get to the news? It's been a heavy news week, and we got a ton to get to there.
So let's do it.
Should we dive right in?
Yep.
All right.
It's time for sci-fi news.
So, Matt.
Yes.
Literally, almost as soon as we finished recording last week, huge news dropped.
Everything just came like crazy. So why don't you go ahead and get
your first. I'm talking about one specific item here.
Are you talking about Superman?
Yes.
And the casting of Lois Lane?
Amy Adams is going to be cast as Lois Lane.
Great choice. I like this actress.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, I think she'll have to dye her hair because she's a redheaded person.
But Lois Lane, one of the redheaded species of us.
And Lois Lane has black hair.
Yeah, but who cares? It's Superman, and I don't really care about continuity, so I say keep her hair red.
Oh, should we start a movement?
Yes.
We want a redheaded Lois Lane?
Yes.
All right.
As a way of telling Superman what we think of him and his continuity.
There it is.
Superman, you can go stuff yourself.
You know, speaking of Superman, I have to say I must have made an error because I read that Viggo Mortensen is now no longer attached to Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah, that's the other thing I read. Like, as soon as we finished recording last time, I sat down.
So I was wrong.
So much for accuracy.
I mean, I thought I must have read something similar, but it doesn't sound like I was totally off. I think it fell apart over the course of the last couple days.
Yeah, well, last week was kind of one of those episodes where we kept saying, we're 70% sure of this.
Well,
we're
50%. Just that one thing. But
no, we had like three or four things last week where we said that, which I found kind of funny.
So Viggo Mortensen still in the running to play General Zod, but
good.
Nothing's for sure.
Good. And next item, American Gods, which is one of Neil Gaiman's novels.
Oh my, I've never heard of this.
It is a great, great novel. It is not as good as Neverwhere. But few novels are.
Neverwhere sounds like a new apparel that Neil Gaiman is like, oh, come on, buy my new clothes. Neverwhere.
Okay. It's not.
Okay.
But
it's a book.
So American Gods, great, great book. I love this book. Basic premise of the book is that anytime somebody believes in something, it creates a god out of that thing.
Okay.
So you have all of the old gods that people used to believe in, like the Egyptian gods and the Norse mythology, and they all are living in America because people who emigrated to America believed in them, and so they brought the gods over with them.
Okay.
They've now stopped believing in those old gods, and so the old gods are starting to die off because nobody's believing in them anymore.
Okay.
So they're getting less and less powerful. And then you have the new gods of the things people worship now. So you have like the god of the internet and the god of the freeway and just all these crazy new gods.
Good.
Yeah. And so it's about the war between the old and the new gods. A fantastic book.
Okay.
Anyway, Neil Gaiman has said this week that there is a genius director attached to this project.
Christopher Nolan?
I don't know. He called him an Oscar-winning genius director.
Has Christopher Nolan won an Oscar?
He has not.
Oh.
This is a moment of silence for that crime. I mean, come on. Inception? He should have won for Inception.
You just stopped talking about it. What's happening?
That's what I do when I'm mad about something. I just stop talking. I mean, he should have won for Dark Knight and Memento. Nolan should have like 4 or 5 Oscars right now.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Don't we have some...
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll get to that. I'm just saying that in general, you know, Christopher Nolan deserves far more recognition from the Academy than he has gotten. So I would love to have him, but I don't think he meets the criteria Neil Gaiman is talking about.
Yeah.
Apparently, this guy's been trying to develop the novel for like 8 years.
Hmm.
So who knows?
I'm yet to read anything by Neil Gaiman, but I hope to soon.
Do it.
All right.
So what do you got, Matt, for Neil?
Well, this is not sci-fi related. Well, semi, but it's more on the Christian side. I just read... this morning, or actually this afternoon, there's a movie coming out called Rapture Palooza. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
And Daryl from Office, the actor's name is Craig Robinson, is going to be playing the Antichrist.
Yes. This sounds hysterical.
Did you read what it's about?
Just a little.
It sounds to me like they're making fun of like the left behind theology.
Yes.
And so it's set in a world where all the Christians have left and then the ensuing plagues come.
Yes.
And Craig Robinson, obviously, is ruling the world.
And you know what? I think Left Behind theology deserves to get made fun of.
As do I.
Yes, I am not a dispensationalist, which is the theological position of the Left Behind series.
Which states that all Christians will be raptured before a 7-year period of tribulation in the end of time.
So I'm going to throw this out here and then not explain it just to make everybody wonder and be curious. But
okay.
The rapture... the entire concept of the rapture is based on a complete misreading of 1 Thessalonians 4:17.
Exactly, where it says caught up.
Yep, it is misread by people who believe in the rapture.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and maybe someday, maybe is end times, is that something that we talk about here at
the Sci-Fi Christian? Yeah, we could do an episode.
Wait a second. I had an email that I think I forwarded you, but I don't know if we've read, with an idea about talking about how end times and apocalypse.
Did you send it to me when I was in Israel?
Yes.
Then I probably lost it.
I don't want to say who it's from because I it's one of two people and I don't want to misread. So next week I'll read this email.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to track it down again. And by the way, if you guys sent some stuff in to me or whatever when I was in Israel and during our hiatus and we lost it and you didn't get right on the air, I'm sorry. I got a bajillion emails while I was gone and some of them got lost.
And actually, we do try to read every single...
yes.
Email or phone and play phone calls or at least mention that somebody sent in. So
yes.
If we haven't mentioned you yet, send us a reminder because that just came to me. And yes, so...
No, just resend the email.
Yeah.
You know, you do the legwork of finding it because I'm not digging through my email archives. Sorry,
so,
I was gone for a month. You know, or we were off the air for a month and it happens.
Yeah, so anyways, it is... let's talk about at some point how end times is shown in sci-fi.
Yes, and we'll explain that rather cryptic statement that I just gave.
Excellent.
If you're really curious, look into the Greek word parousia. P-A-R-O-U-I-S-A.
Caught up.
Yes.
I gave it away.
While we're being cryptic, this is fun. So, moving on. Peter Jackson might be doing something a little bit naughty, in my opinion.
Really?
He is making changes to The Hobbit.
Well, we could see that coming by some of the casting.
To incorporate new female characters who are not present in the book.
I am not surprised.
Neither am I. I mean, on the one, let me give the argument in Peter Jackson's defense, even though I'm not terribly thrilled about this. The Hobbit is basically a boys' club book. I mean, you've got 13 dwarves, plus Bilbo, plus Gandalf, and that's the cast of the book.
Mm-hmm.
All the dwarves are male. So you have no female characters anywhere in the book. So I get that they're going to want to add some stuff in. And we knew Galadriel, Cate Blanchett, was going to be in the two movies somewhere. And they were gonna
and she was not in Hobbit?
No, but they were going to use some of the other material Tolkien had written about, okay, you know, in the appendices and kind of work that in to tie it to Lord of the Rings. So, whatever. But now he's inventing new characters, which could not be good. I mean, this could be a disaster. Not for the entire movie, but for those segments.
I love how serious you take it. I mean, I
was almost in tears talking about The Hobbit starting filming last week.
I know. So I'm not surprised at all. I heard that they were bringing back casts from the Lord of the Rings trilogy that weren't actually in The Hobbit. So the fact that they're now bringing in new characters, not a huge surprise.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to sink the whole movie, but I'll give you a perfect example of why I'm worried about this. Peter Jackson did something similar on Fellowship of the Ring, and it ruined one of the best parts of the book.
Can you be more specific?
Yeah, the entire section where Frodo has been stabbed on Weathertop and he's, you know, about to die, and then Arwen shows up and brings him to the ford, and she calls the flood that takes down the Nine Riders.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you haven't watched Lord of the Rings for forever.
No, I've seen it. Okay. I saw it in the last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any clue what I'm talking about?
I remember.
Okay. So that whole scene is very, very different than it is in the book. Arwen does not show up there. It is not her that calls the flood. And in my opinion, it ruined one of the more powerful moments in the book.
Who calls the flood?
Elrond and Gandalf create it and send it at the exact right moment.
Who's Elrond?
Elrond?
Which one is that?
Arwen's father?
Arwen. Oh, Mr.
Good
Smith.
Lord, man. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so Lord of the Rings out on Blu-ray June 28th. We are going to sit down and watch it.
I would love to watch just one day all of them back to back. Yeah. That would be very fun.
Yeah. As long we're as talking extended pizza. Editions.
I'm up for it.
Is going to be like a 12-hour commitment.
Just feed me and I'm up for it.
Okay, we can do this.
I will enjoy watching you die, Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. So Hugo Weaving, great actor. that's Elrond.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that he doesn't do more. I mean, anytime Peter Jackson has really made major changes to the source material, hasn't been good. He messed up Gimli's character in Two Towers.
Which, did we talk about this on the
air?
Yeah. I thought he was hilarious.
No, he was terrible. You know, any of the major changes Peter Jackson made, even when they weren't horrible, have been changes for the worse. So I'm not too enthusiastic about this, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt because I don't feel as serious about it as you do.
Oh, I feel serious about it.
So, good. I have huge news.
All right, let's hear your huge news.
And I don't know, does your Justice League news fall under our Dark Knight news?
Some of it does.
Let's save it then. I'll give you non-huge news.
Okay.
Did you know they're making a movie called Oz, The Great and Powerful?
I knew that there's like 50,000 Oz movies in development
right
now.
They're doing numerous Oz movies and numerous Snow White movies all at the same time.
But yes.
That's what studios do for competition. Anyways.
It's stupid.
This one's going to be starring Mila Kunis.
Yeah, who cares?
And James Franco, who I think he's an up-and-comer, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a decent actor.
He's been pretty solid. I can't wait to see him in Rise of the Apes.
Have you seen, good lord, on the plane ride back, I watched 127 Hours.
I haven't seen it, but I know the whole story because it's based.
Fantastic movie.
On a true story.
Yeah, it's not science fiction, but I highly, highly recommend it. Anything Danny Boyle does, including Sunshine, is awesome.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm never going to see this movie.
Did you see Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
It's okay.
He did that. Slumdog Millionaire was great, man.
It was okay.
You don't know good movies.
I love Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, so that part was good.
You don't know good movies. You have no taste.
I have awesome
taste. You're sitting here talking about Planet of the Apes. You bought The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
No, it was a gift. A gift. Speaking of that.
Yes. Should we segue into our contest?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's segue. Last week, we teased one of the greatest prizes we've ever given away.
Yes. No.
Well, we've never given anything away.
That's true.
So, we have in our possession a used copy of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and a brand new first issue of The Future Foundation, number one.
Yes, Colin, our listener from the UK, had something to say about this. He said, in regards to the gift offer for the competition, I think I'll pass. As appealing as it is, I think the thought of winning two secondhand items is a bit too exciting. This is, of course, coupled with the fact that Benjamin Button is a dire film. That made me laugh out loud. Well done, Colin.
So thanks to Colin's email, we are calling this first ever giveaway the Second Hand Spectacular.
Yeah. So what do people need to do, Matt?
Well, it's easy. Listeners, we have just entered episode 10.
Yes.
And over the last weeks, we've had many fun and fond memories.
Yes.
I hope you have as well. So we want to hear from you. Write in to us or call in. Anything will be fine. Just tell us, what's been your favorite moment from the first 10 episodes of The Sci-Fi Christian?
And they should send that to
feedback@scifichristianpodcast.com, or they could call
612-4121-SFC.
So that is it. You do that, you will be entered into
a random drawing.
Yep. And then we will draw the name live on the air next week.
How about in 2 weeks?
Why 2 weeks?
Oh, just to give more people time to hear the episode.
And... I know, but the longer that we wait, the longer week. I have to keep that stuff in my house.
Fine.
So next week, you have 1 week remaining.
I mean, considering that you made shelf space for Batman and Robin, I didn't think it would be too big of a burden, but okay.
Good point.
Yeah.
So that is it. The second hand spectacular.
All right. So we had some awesome superhero news this week. Actually, yesterday, and we'll get to the Batman stuff in just a minute, but I want to talk about the non-Batman stuff. Yesterday was like superhero news day, man.
I like to say superhero central.
Yeah. In fact, you can go out to our Facebook page because one of our listeners, Daniel Butcher, posted like all these articles out there for us.
Yeah, so, 3 in a row from Blaster.
Yes, which is another great website you can check out for some sci-fi news.
Mm-hmm.
So X-Men sequels. Tell me about them.
All right. Well, X-Men, of course, First Class is coming out, but they're saying we're not just going down the prequel route. We're also looking at sequels for X4 and X5.
Yes.
And their X-Men 4 will go into X-Men 5, so they're obviously running them at the same time.
Yes. So I think that's, I don't know, I'm moderately excited about it. I mean, coupled with this, other X-Men news is that the Wolverine is still apparently on, despite Darren Aronofsky leaving. Yep. So.
And Hugh Jackman said at a recent Comic-Con that they're looking for a director that is, at first he said, we'll get somebody as good or even better than Darren Aronofsky. And then he said, well, maybe not better.
Yeah, maybe not as good either.
I think they're looking for a real high quality director based on what they're saying is the high quality of script.
Yeah. So here's my opinion
is
on all this.
Is that a spin?
Yeah, totally. we just had an A-list director bail on us, and we need to make ourselves sound good. Here's my take on this.
Mm-hmm.
Prove it to me by making a good X-Men movie, and I will be excited about this.
I think First Class.
I'm hopeful.
I think we have some good luck there.
Make a good X-Men movie, and I'm on board.
Speaking of spinoffs.
Yes.
Because we're kind of talking about spinoffs. Deadpool is still in the works, starring Ryan Reynolds. However, even though Ryan Reynolds played Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah,
it's going to be completely separate. It's going to be the same actor playing Deadpool, but it won't be that character that was in Wolverine. It's weird because they kind of messed up the character in that movie, so they're going to go back to the roots of the real character, and it's looking to be more of an R-rated, violent movie based on the character. Which is, did you know he's called the Merc with the Mouth?
No, I did not.
He's a mercenary that. He breaks the fourth wall. Did you know that about the character?
Yes, and they're talking about doing that in this movie.
In order to bridge the gap of why isn't he the same Deadpool from the Wolverine movie.
Yes, so that could be interesting. Yeah. Another interesting bit of superhero news this week is that Warner Brothers has apologized for the sucky nature of the Green Lantern trailer.
Really? I didn't hear this. I thought you were going to go somewhere else.
No. Warner Brothers came out this week and apologized for the Green Lantern trailer.
I did not know that.
No, I went back and rewatched it, and I didn't think it was terrible. I'm not that excited about the movie, but
you
whatever.
Know, along similar lines, did you know that the creators of the Wonder Woman television show changed the costume based on the fan outcry of that Entertainment Weekly picture that came out?
Because it looked horrible.
Well, her pants were like shiny and plasticky, and then her boots were blue. I mean...
It looked like an 80s costume.
The people that are really into Wonder Woman were mad that her boots weren't red, because that's, I guess, what they're supposed to be. So,
who cares?
They've changed her costume and made it more of a jean-like pants and red boots.
Yeah, who cares?
I mean, that's...
Whatever.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the big news, which...
Did you talk about Bryan Singer? No, we didn't talk about Bryan Singer.
Bryan Singer.
Who did Superman Returns.
Oh, yes.
He went on the record at saying he was trying to make a superhero movie that appealed to females... Also, I mean, men and females both. And in the course, that he forgot to add in the action.
Do you know who Superman Returns appealed to?
Nobody.
Exactly.
It
was a horrible movie.
And so he acknowledged that it should have had more action, and if he could do it over, he would have redone the first act, starting the entire movie with the awesome plane scene.
Yeah. Dumb, dumb movie. Still would have sucked. So let's get to the Justice League movie news. And let's save the Batman part because we'll segue into Batman with that. So Justice League movie has been announced for 2013, which is really, really soon.
Very soon, because I heard about the Avengers movie way back in 2008.
Yeah.
It might have been, no, it was definitely
They've been talking about it forever.
Yeah, and then they've had time, Marvel's had time to plan out the single character movies in preparation for Avengers. I mean, we have Joss Whedon on board. It's been a, I mean, I've been waiting for 2012 to see this movie for years.
Yes.
Now all of a sudden, Warner Brothers comes out and says, we're going to do our team movie a year after Avengers.
Yes. Here's why they might be able to do this. I don't know if you saw this. This happened just this evening. Okay. I saw this news. Zack Snyder has come out and said that his Superman movie has nothing to do with the Justice League.
Okay.
The Superman and Clark Kent in that movie will be independent of the Superman, ongoing Superman movies. And it sounds like the same thing's true for Batman.
That is, and this is, I mean, I know we're leading into Batman, but
yeah.
Yeah, this could be bad, and I want to wait until we actually get to the Batman news.
Well, then let's get to it.
All right.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
All right.
All right, Ben.
Yes.
Are you ready for huge news?
I'm ready, but I have a slightly different interpretation on this than what has been generally spoken about in the mainstream media. So, along with the Justice League announcement, it has been announced that there's, after Christopher Nolan's done, there will be a reimagining of Batman.
I actually read the words reboot.
You read the, not in the quote he gave, though.
Maybe not the studio quote, but yeah. So what this comes down to is they're letting Christopher Nolan's Batman stand in its own reality.
Which I'm glad.
And they're going to essentially start over. Hopefully not with the origin, but they're going to get a new actor, a new Batman to take over. They're not going to do a fourth. They're just going to start the story over.
Yes, but the disagreement I have is the interpretation that says reboot is the same thing as reimagining. Well, I don't know that it is.
It's not exactly. They could just keep the story going and have it be maybe a little bit of a different reality, but
to me, the word choice implies that they're not going to do another origin story, but that it will be independent of Nolan's series.
They can't do another origin. I mean, they could, but that would be dumb.
Yeah.
It'd be really... I hope they don't.
I think that I'm very happy that... I know we disagree on this, but I'm very, very happy that Nolan's series will stand on its own.
Depending on how they do this, what I'll call the fourth one, depending on how that works out. I mean, I like Christopher Nolan. I'll be glad that he's got his world, but as long as they don't do an origin story, I'm fine. If they just keep going, that's all I care about.
Well,
I just don't want to see Bruce Wayne's parents get killed again.
Yeah, but they can keep going, but they shouldn't be tied by the choices Nolan has made.
Okay.
So in other words,
if they want to introduce some of those characters.
The Joker, whatever, they should go ahead and do that. It's a different world. Nolan's series stands alone. Now, Nolan is going to stay on as producer.
Which I think is a mistake.
I do not.
Because even though I like Christopher Nolan, I definitely like him, obviously. We talk about him all the time. He was given the reins to create a whole new world, and now look how much we love this guy.
Yeah.
I don't want this new director to be tied down by the awesomeness of Nolan. I want him to have him or her to have their own vision of Batman.
Here's my theory on what's going on here. Nolan will be a producer in name only.
Just to make
to give credibility.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's go right away to this next point. So,
and they'll have him on there because Nolan gets Batman, and if the guy comes up with something stupid and says, you know, I really love that George Clooney interpretation, Nolan will have the power to say, uh-uh. But beyond that, I don't think he's going to be hugely involved.
Okay, so here's a problem that could come up.
Yes.
Justice League, they might have. So we have Christian Bale right now, and then we're looking at a new person to take over for, like I said, what I'm calling number four.
Yes.
They might have a totally different actor play Batman in the Justice League.
So we could have three Batmans in like 3 years.
This is a mistake. Very, very big mistake.
Yep. Totally agree.
So, I don't know. It makes me much less interested in Justice League and what they're looking to do than, instead of going the single character route, two team, they're doing the opposite. They'll introduce a Justice League in 2013, and they're working on scripts for Flash, Aquaman, and Wonder Woman, which will be separate from the TV show. So again, we have two different characters at the exact same time. I mean, this is a mess.
Everything Marvel's doing that's brilliant, DC is messing up.
Yeah, I really, really agree.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the Batman movies that Nolan is doing are amazing, but with those coming to an end next year, I'm not overly optimistic about the future prospects of their movies. And by the way, speaking of Batman movie, Dark Knight Rises coming out next year. 477 days, 3 hours, 54 minutes, yeah. and 38 seconds.
You have a countdown on your screen.
I do.
Wow.
32 seconds.
Okay, so... So
one of the things I want to talk about with Batman is Gary Oldman was interviewed this week.
Commissioner Gordon.
Commissioner Gordon. And he let loose a few very intriguing tidbits. So I want to play his interview for us.
All right. Batman Begins in May, and... all I can say is that it's a great, really great story. It's a great script. He's outdone himself from The Dark Knight. It's fantastic. No, it starts in May. We start here. We come back here, I think. So, you know, I'll be picking up the script in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually working with Tom Hardy on The Wettest County that I'm going to do. So I work with him on Tinker. And the next one, and then he's in the next Batman. So it's the year of Tom Hardy. Yeah.
It is an amazing cast for this one. I mean, I think that The Dark Knight had an incredible cast, but just the lineup is great. And Tom Hardy's announcement as well, it's brilliant. Are you excited about working with all those people at the same time?
Yeah. And I have quite a bit to do with Tom in this one. He's going to be. Well, you know the character, and
yeah,
it's going to be fantastic.
You're not allowed to say that, maybe, or
no? I think it's common knowledge that is that there's.
Not quite sure because Christopher Nolan is incredibly good at keeping things secret. How does he do it?
Well, first of all, you to get into the production office, you have someone meet you, and then there's keys in various doors that lock. The script you read. In the production office, and there's no ending to the script either, because he tells you the ending so that it doesn't leak and get out and people spoil it on the internet. It's very tight, very, very tight. It's very tight security. Yeah, that's how he does it. Yeah.
What did you first feel when you read the script and read your part?
Oh, it's a great, you know, great, yeah. Got a lot to do, and yeah.
Are there any other?
I can't say anything.
I know, but are there any other major things we're going to find out soon, or major names that are going to be announced soon? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I truly don't know.
But how can it top The Dark Knight? I just don't understand how it's possible.
Well, the story's fabulous.
It really ties together with the first one.
He sort of brings it back. He brings it around, and that's it. Can't say anymore.
Fair enough. Thanks very much. Have a good night.
It would have been awesome if, when they said, "What was the biggest surprise?" if he would have been like. When I found out I died at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Or when I found out Christian Bale dies at the end.
Yeah. Ooh, that would be awesome.
I'm going on record that Christian Batman dies at the end of this movie.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yep. I think that's a big surprise. But a lot of interesting tidbits. This is a wealth of information.
If they kill Batman, that would be unprecedented.
Yes.
That would be really awesome. Yes. How did you come up with that?
I just think that Nolan really wants his world to stay his world.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he wants to run the risk of other people meddling with it.
Interesting.
So, few things we got out of this. Number one, Tom Hardy is going to have a lot of scenes with Gordon. Mm-hmm. How do we read that?
I think that maybe Bane will start out as a police officer.
Ooh, I like that theory.
And that at some point he must get injected with something.
Venom.
Yep. And... it turns him. It kind of makes him a little crazy, and thus he joins in with the other bad guys.
Yes, we also got confirmation.
Oh, no. This is what will happen. He's a good guy, police officer.
Yes,
and maybe he's trying to stop crime, and one of the bad guys, maybe the Holiday Killer, catches him, and they inject him with something to kill him. It actually turns him mad.
Could be. Other piece of information, Christopher Nolan is a little bit anal, as though this was news, but necessarily so. I mean, that's just so cool. It's like there's various keys that unlock various doors.
Yeah, and then when he said, it makes sense to not write out the end and just keep it all up in your head.
Yeah, so I'm picturing this giant vault that you have to go through and, you know, basically get strip searched before you're allowed to read the Batman script or whatever, you know. Incredibly tight security that he's describing. But then the last tidbit he throws out there is that it all thematically ties back to the first one, which has been the rumor that's been going around.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. man, you've got me stunned here. I think you could be onto something.
Yes.
If Batman dies, that would be amazing.
I think that we have good evidence that Talia al Ghul is going to be in this movie.
And so what? How does that lead to him dying?
It just goes back to the whole thematic thing from tying it back to the first one. I think we're going to see Talia al Ghul. I think we are going to see Alberto Falcone. I'm going to say that the original sources were right. Joseph Gordon-Levitt will be playing Alberto Falcone, and we will get a whole bunch of thematic ties back to the first movie.
Wow. This is going to be good.
I'm so psyched.
Better than the Justice League.
Yeah. By the way, 477 days, 3 hours, 49 minutes, and 4 seconds to go. All right, Matt, we got a lot to talk about. Should we get to our main topic?
We should, but first,
yes,
we should mention we had brought up an Alan Moore episode.
Oh, yes.
A couple weeks back.
We said we would do it soon.
But we're not going to do it too soon because it turns out me and Ben haven't read as much as we should before doing that episode.
Yes, we're going to take the time to read some of his graphic novels, and it will happen eventually.
But not too out there. In the
this summer sometime.
The soon eventually.
Yes. I want to finish reading Fables first.
Oh, really? You're going to catch all up on that first?
Yeah, we're close.
Okay.
And once I'm done reading Fables, I'll order some of Alan Moore's stuff, and we'll go from there.
That is fair. So just watch for that in the eventual future.
Yes. All right. Let's get to the main event.
I'm ready.
Whoops. I played the wrong transition music. Here we go.
The Adjustment Bureau.
Yes.
I saw this movie, and I saw it with my roommate Ryan, and we talked about it and God and theology for 2 hours afterwards. And
oh my
then
gosh.
We immediately went online and watched a presentation on some different views on God's plan and free will and faith. So,
well, we actually had a listener of ours, Wayne, call in about the movie, and I'd like to start this conversation by playing his call, and then maybe we can talk about the movie a bit before getting into the theology of it.
Wayne from Tuning In with Wayne Henderson?
Yes.
Of the Fringe Casting
with
Wayne and Dan?
Yes, the one and only world famous podcaster.
Yes, check him out at mediavoiceovers.com.
Yes, I think he's, I mean, we're world famous. Thank you, Colin, for making us world famous.
I'm going to call us world famous.
Excuse me. We have listeners here in America, and we have listeners in England. That is literally all over the world, which is the very definition of world famous.
Speaking of England, I want to go to England sometime. Yeah. So I'm not inviting myself over to your house, Colin, but we kind of are. If you ever want to have some guests, I would love to come. Would you want to go over there?
Absolutely. In fact, I was just thinking in Israel that my next big trip that I want to take is I want to go see Oxford, tour where C.S. Lewis lived, where Tolkien lived,
awesome.
Go to the Eagle and the Child, which is the pub where the Inklings met at, and do that whole tour.
Ben, we should do that.
Yeah.
Colin, this trip depends on you.
Yes.
Or if we have any other listeners in the UK, send us an email at feedback@sci-fi-christian-podcast.com.
I don't know why we wouldn't. But yeah, let's play this from Wayne. He's got some good thoughts to say on the movie, and then we can share some of our opinions on it.
Hey, Matt and Ben. Ben and Matt. This is Wayne Henderson from the Fringe Casting with Wayne and Dan podcast over at mediavoiceovers.com/podcast. Calling in for the Sci-Fi Christian podcast. I had heard that you were going to be talking about the Adjustment Bureau, so I wanted to definitely call and be a little bit of part of that segment of the show. I have seen the Adjustment Bureau. I owe it to myself to see any and all movies based on a book or short story by Philip K. Dick, my favorite author of all time. Now, of course, the Adjustment Bureau is based on one of his old short stories, so there wasn't all that much that they could really flesh out into a movie. I was actually surprised when I heard that they were going to make the Adjustment Team into the movie, The Adjustment Bureau. And, of course, to kind of flesh it out and make it a little more modern, they did have a bit of the romance love story, which was fairly well done. But I would say it's the most romance that we've ever had in a Philip K. Dick movie, even though it was well done. The sci-fi that was in the Adjustment Bureau, there wasn't all that much of it, but what there was very well done. I enjoyed seeing that and the cool effects and the going through the doors and all of that and just kind of trying to wrap your brain about it. It's definitely not a movie that is Christian-based, you know, talking about you know, the people being in charge and all that, kind of alluding to them being like God. But so I just kind of put that aside and focused on the movie. In fact, I just wanted to have a final comment about Adjustment Bureau. One, go see it because it is pretty cool to watch. And number two, since there was so much romance in this, I would call it a Philip K. chick flick movie. Definitely a date movie. Good stuff. So as we wait to see if they'll ever make some of his greater novels into movies like Ubik, Maze of Death, Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, things like that. Those should definitely be made into movies. And if somebody wants to get really bold and make the Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch into a movie, that would be epic. It would be epic. So, anyways, I'm going to let you get back to your Sci-Fi Christian podcast. Thanks, guys, for listening. This is Wayne. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Wayne, for sending that call in.
Yes, I actually have not read any of those novels he mentioned, and I've read a fair amount of Philip K. Dick, so I'll have to check those out.
Yeah.
He's an interesting writer.
Philip K. chick flick, did you agree?
No.
You didn't think it was a chick flick?
Nope.
No. It was definitely had romance, but it was a great thriller.
I thought the romance was secondary to the story.
But also very important.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Secondary and central all at the same time.
Yeah. I honestly did not... Obviously, the romance... you know, is going to appeal to women. It's put in there, and they amped it up for that reason. But I thought by far the most appealing part of this movie was the philosophy and theology going on behind it.
So let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, what was your opinion of the movie, just as a movie?
I loved it.
Okay.
I mean, I left it. Well, I mean, you're talking about... Well, it's thought-provoking.
Right. I mean, all that's part of it. But just, you know, in terms of thematically, was it well done? What would be your star rating if we were giving this a rating? Ooh.
5 out of 5.
I'm going to have to go with 3.5.
5 is my best score, and 5 is what I give it.
Yes.
I liked the actor choices.
Yep.
Matt Damon, I think, is awesome.
Emily Blunt.
Yep, Emily Blunt was good. I liked the religious aspects. I liked the sci-fi aspects. I liked everything about it.
The reason I am giving the movie a lower rating, and I'll try and stay spoiler-free here.
Yes.
And if I descend into spoilers, I will warn first.
Okay.
It ultimately did not have the courage to follow up the questions it was asking.
Okay. I am trying to think of what you mean, and I don't agree.
Okay, spoiler for the next minute.
Okay.
So here we go. The movie ends with him being able to get what he wants, basically.
But he earned it.
No, he didn't. Instead, the movie sets up this huge amount of tension... about that he can either have what he wants or he can and go against God's plan, or he submits to the plan and he doesn't get what he wants. And the movie cheats. It gives him a way out, which was superficial and not well done.
It wasn't a way out, because if we're still spoiling, we had already learned that on one of the original plans, they were supposed to be together. And so that was still there.
No, it was a cheap ending, and the movie did not have the courage to follow up the tough choices that it was setting up. Rather than leaving us to really wrestle with the tension and force us to look those hard questions in the face and deal with them, it provided us a cheap resolution instead. And okay. I was very dissatisfied with that.
Your minute is up.
Okay.
So okay. I can see what you're saying,
yeah.
And I disagree.
Okay. I just would have preferred to have it not resolved.
I like resolution.
I like resolution too, but sometimes that's not what a movie needs to give you. You know, rather, this wasn't a movie that needed resolution. It was a movie that needed to leave you wrestling with these hard theological questions.
That's what I think it still did that also.
I disagree. I think it did that, but not because of what was in the movie.
Okay.
It raised the questions and then offered a cheap way out, which I thought was unsatisfying.
I guess if we are going to be... I'm not going to be specific, but for minor spoiler, if you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. They did set up a character to be mostly bad the entire movie until the last very end bit.
Yeah.
So I guess that was unexpected.
Yeah, it kind of hit the eject button on the hard questions it was asking. It didn't have the courage to stay with what it had set up.
Interesting.
So ultimately, I thought that it was a movie that could have been much, much better than it was.
So what it does, though, is it brings up this idea that in our lives, there's a team, an adjustment bureau that goes around and makes sure that things stay to a certain plan, a blueprint, if you will. And Who makes this plan? Well, we aren't told specifically, but I believe it'd be...
The chairman.
Yeah, I believe that the chairman could be and is a representation of God. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, was this a Christian movie? No, because it's they said the whole stupid thing about how the chairman appears to everybody in their own way. So we got a nice dose of pluralism at the end. So not specifically Christian in that way, but certainly it set up the whole idea of God, that God has a plan, you know, God in the abstract here, rather than specifically Christian God. Yeah. But God has a plan, and that God is adjusting our lives so that his plan is accomplished.
Exactly. So the Adjustment Bureau, they even said flat out in the movie, we have been referred to as angels.
Yes.
So that's how, from a Christian perspective, we would view the Adjustment Bureau as angels who are going around and messing with you, basically, making sure that you stay that according to God's plan. So they'll interfere in your life. They'll make you miss a bus. They'll make you early for work just so that you stay on a certain track. So for everything, for who you end up marrying, who you or what you end up doing for a career, everything is dependent on a plan that is not a set in stone. Actually, we find out that this plan could change, which makes the God character look even more like an idiot.
I'm not sure I agree on that.
Well,
but we'll get into that.
I think in the movie, though, what they're trying to say is the fact that the plan can change makes this God unfair, because who are you to say that what plan should be right?
Exactly. I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
I think that even though the movie isn't specifically Christian, certainly this is a very Christian idea and a very relevant debate inside of Christianity about predestination versus free will.
Which I love this debate.
Absolutely. And this is a pretty major theme in science fiction in general. And that's something maybe we'll talk about as we go along. But this isn't just the Adjustment Bureau. I mean, I'm thinking of movies like The Matrix certainly brings up this whole concept of free will versus predestination. I mean, what is it that Morpheus says to Neo? That, do you believe in fate, Neo? And he says something like, no, because I don't like believing that I'm not in charge of my own destiny. Minority Report.
That's what Morpheus says.
Yes. Minority Report. Doesn't get into the idea of God.
Which is also a Philip K. Dick story.
Yes, it is. Ooh, I think Philip K. Dick kind of liked this stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, that doesn't get into God, but it has people that could see the future. And so you are arrested before you commit a crime.
Is the future set?
Yeah.
Is the question that movie is asking. And then even I was thinking of something like Lord of the Rings and the whole speech that Gandalf gives about to Frodo, where Frodo's saying, I wish I had never found the ring. I wish it hadn't come to me. And Gandalf talks about, well, you were meant to find the ring, and Bilbo was meant to have it. And there is evil at work, but there's also other wills and other plans at work besides evil. So again, we get this idea of that there are wills at work. There is a plan out there. In Lord of the Rings, it introduces the other complexity that evil is also working against that plan, and it has its own plan. And so I think that as we go along, I want us to keep these different ideas in mind. And let's see how they line up with what the Bible actually has to say about this stuff.
Excellent.
I would say that the majority opinion in science fiction when it comes to predestination is that it is something to be rebelled against.
Right, because people are always saying, it's not set in stone. I can change. I can make my own fate.
Yes.
Or I can make my own future. I don't have to. So people are often traveling back in time to change what is their fate.
Yeah. Or even just the entire concept of the Matrix, of rebelling against those who have this set plan for our lives and want to keep us confined in this area. I think science fiction as a whole has this drive to break out of the future, that the future is not set, we can change it. And we are not bound by a plan. And I think the Adjustment Bureau reflects that mentality.
Yeah.
So that's another thing I want to keep in mind as we talk about this. Is that a correct outlook to take?
That we should be rebelling against fate?
Yeah. Is it unjust that God would have a plan for our lives?
Or does he have a plan at all?
Yes.
That is what we should
talk about. So we got a lot to talk about. Where do you want to start, Matt?
I think we should start by just bringing up some of the history of this theological debate. Often people talk about this Calvinism versus Arminianism, and now, more recently, something I've been interested to study is open theism.
Yes. Now, Calvinism versus Arminianism, it kind of has a few different flavors to it, because it doesn't necessarily have to do with overall predestination. I mean, you can be a Calvinist and believe in total free will except for the idea of salvation. I mean, five-point Calvinism is only concerned about predestination as it relates to salvation.
Well, maybe we should define the terms before we go too far.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Calvinism.
Yes.
Often associated with predestination.
Yes.
And that it comes from John Calvin.
Yes.
And like you said, summarized by 5 points. Do you want to hit those 5 points?
Tulip is the analogy.
Yep.
Or the anagram. T, total depravity.
Correct.
U, unconditional election. L, limited atonement.
Yes.
I, irresistible grace. And P, perseverance of the saints. What do those mean, Matt?
All right. Interesting you should ask. Total depravity, this says that all of us are fallen.
Yes.
So we are all basically sinners.
Yep.
Next.
Unconditional election.
Unconditional election. This doctrine asserts that God's choice from eternity... I'm just going to tell you what it means.
Good call.
Yeah. So unconditional election means that God chooses who he wants to basically become saved, essentially. Yeah.
Certainly the Bible refers to the concept of the elect quite a bit, both in terms of Israel in the Old Testament and Christians in the New Testament. Unconditional election says that the election, those who are the elect, is 100% God's choice, and there is nothing you can do to become one of the elect. There is nothing you can do to not be one of the elect if you are one of them.
Good. L, limited atonement. This is
the sticky one.
This one says that Jesus died for only some, those that are the elect.
Jesus only died for the elect.
And we should say before we go too far into this that we're presented these. This is not necessarily what I or Ben believe.
Neither one of us is Calvinist, so no.
Okay.
And even on that one, limited atonement, you get a lot of four-point Calvinists out there who will agree to the other 4 points and reject that one.
Okay.
So that
I would also reject you. That God, the unconditional election, I don't believe that God calls some and not others. And we can fight that out if you want.
Yeah, I think I'm probably with you on that one.
Let's move on. Do we have I and P remaining? I, irresistible grace, means that if God calls you, you cannot resist.
Yes.
If he wants you to be saved, you are going to be saved.
Yes.
And vice versa. And finally, perseverance of the saints means once saved, always saved. If you... get a belief in Jesus as God, you will never lose that belief.
And if you do fall away from the faith, you were never one of the elect to begin with.
Yep.
So
that is Calvinism in a nutshell.
Yes. Arminianism actually is kind of interesting because people think of it as the antithesis to Calvinism, but it's really not.
No, that's what I found too when I was studying. It's interesting how historically they run parallel.
Well, the entire debate, and this is one of my issues with Arminianism, is that it's not really a true alternative to Calvinist thinking. The entire debate takes place among Calvin students.
Okay.
Jacob Arminius was a student of John Calvin.
Okay.
And so he split with Calvin on the issue of predestination, but he was still operating from the same basic mindset, the same hermeneutical approach to Scripture, all of this stuff. So it's not a true alternative because it's still within the same theological school of thought.
So it's interesting that people... Sometimes they'll say Calvinism versus Arminianism. Otherwise, you'll just hear predestination versus free will.
Yeah. So Arminianism would agree with total depravity, that we're all sinful, and on our own we cannot choose Jesus. It would say conditional election instead of unconditional election. In other words, this is where Arminianism gets a little bit funky.
Okay.
God looks forward into time, or he's outside of time and he sees the choice that we would make if given the opportunity, and he elects the ones who would have chosen him given the opportunity.
Okay.
That's a little bit kludgy.
Yeah.
And this is one
of my... a little bit Minority Report.
Yeah, this is one of my complaints about Arminianism, is I think we're getting a little bit far away from Scripture at this point. But be that as it may, so God elects based on his foreknowledge of who would choose him given the opportunity. Limited atonement is flat-out rejected in Arminian thinking.
Completely.
Yep, God dies for the world, and I think that is an appropriate rejection.
Biblically I can't see. Yeah. I don't know from a biblical standpoint how you could argue. And we probably have Calvinist listeners, so I'll be interested to hear some response to this. But I don't see how you can argue from a biblical perspective that Jesus didn't die for all. It actually says the words.
And even some hardcore Calvinists have issues with this. I mean, Mark Driscoll would call himself a 4.5. Calvinist, because he has some issues with limited election, limited atonement.
Meanwhile, John Piper goes to 7-point Calvinist.
We'll get to the other 2 points in a minute, because that's where it really gets fun.
Okay.
So then, Arminianism, keeping going down the list, irresistible grace, they reject that. Everybody has the freedom to resist God. He gives us the ability to resist him. Mm-hmm. We have a choice. And then perseverance of the saints, Arminianism also rejects that and says that it is possible to fall away from your faith.
Good. And what this all really, I think, central to all these ideas, and what I think will tie more into the sci-fi Christian, is this plan. Is there really a plan? Does God really have a plan for each and every one of us? Or are we just kind of out there on our own trying to figure things out?
Yeah, does God have it all mapped up out before time even begins who he's going to save?
Is he really outside of time, or is he within time?
Right. Now, you mentioned 7-point Calvinism. Mm-hmm. This is where things get a little bit dicey. So the other 2 points are double predestination, which is the belief that God, before time begins, foresees and ordains the fall.
Okay.
So it's not that God, 5-point Calvinism would say the fall happens and then God elects who he will save. Mm-hmm. So in 5-point Calvinism, we're all running off a cliff and God chooses to pull some of us back. Mm-hmm. With double predestination, before anything like that happens, before the fall of man happens, God has already chosen who he will save and who he will damn.
Mm-hmm.
So God is sorting everyone into 2 piles. It's not that humanity is heading towards a cliff and God chooses to save some of us. It's that God saves some of us and throws other people off the cliff.
Okay.
So this is problematic.
So double
predestination. Okay. And then we also get best of all possible worlds. This is the belief that God is literally choosing every choice we make down to the smallest minutia.
This is a huge problem. This is what John Piper believes.
Yes. John Piper is a 7-point Calvinist.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily, I'm not saying that invalidates every teaching he ever gives.
Right,
I know we have a lot of Piper fans, but it's a significant issue for me with him, that God chooses every choice we make, every single action, no matter how small in the history of the world, has been chosen by God to create the best of all possible universes where he is most glorified.
Interesting, and totally wrong. I shouldn't be so...
Well, I mean, you got to think about the implications of this, that we're saying the Holocaust is God, or he ordained this.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying things like rape and child abuse are God is choosing those actions to take place. There's some pretty heavy implications about God's character here.
This is one of my big problems with this idea of the plan, is that this is where it goes to it with some people, that they end up saying, you often hear, especially Christians, but I'm sure other people say, well, this is happening for a reason.
Yeah.
And I've come to believe lately, not everything happens for a reason. I think God can work things out and he's good, but there's no way I believe that everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. So you and I both would reject 7-point Calvinism flat out.
Yeah.
And you and I would both reject 5-point Calvinism.
Yeah. I can get on board with some of them.
Some of them. But here's where it gets a little dicey, Matt. Does or does not the Bible speak of God having a plan?
It talks about, he has certain plans, but I don't think I can take it to it. The Bible says, I don't think the Bible says God has a plan for every minute of your life.
No, and that's not what I'm saying.
I know, but I'm clarifying. Yeah. I think he does have plans,
yes,
but not a master plan like we see in the Adjustment Bureau, where everything has to happen at the exact second just in order to get to this some one place.
Does God ever interfere in history?
Yes.
So sometimes,
and we know that angels also interact with us here.
Yes.
So there is some adjustment happening.
Yes. But so this is where it gets really complicated, because somewhere in between this whole idea that God is hands off, there's complete free will, complete freedom, and this idea that he's controlling the fact that I'm picking up my show outline and now setting it down and speaking into the microphone and he's choosing all this stuff. Yeah. Somewhere in between those two extremes is this idea that God has a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Human wills have a role in that. There is freedom to go against it, but yet God is also at times interfering in history, similar to how the Adjustment Bureau describes, in order to bring about his plan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can deny that there are some things God wants to happen.
Yes.
And we can't stop it. For example, when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, he had a plan to do that. And Abraham tried to convince him to save the city for, you know, 10 people, 5 people.
Yeah.
And eventually God did save Abraham's immediate family that was there. But he was not, his plan was set. He was going to destroy that.
Right. Or even something as basic as appearing to Saul on the road to Damascus. Clear interference in human history.
Exactly. Saul was a Christian killer.
Yes.
And God said, oh, I want to use you for something else.
Yeah.
And changed him.
So God.
But don't you think that in a sense, Saul, before he became Paul, still had to accept that what he was saying was, or seen was, Lord? I mean, he did have to make a choice. But God definitely interfered, but Paul still had to make his choice.
I don't know. I honestly, I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I'm not sure that we are given an answer in Scripture.
Yeah, we're given an answer.
No, we're not.
Because, okay, I don't have Acts open in front of me, but Paul, let's just say Saul. Saul still had to choose to go to Ananias to be prayed for. He still had to accept. It's not like if any of us, if somebody didn't believe in God and Jesus came to them, that doesn't make them a Christian. They still have to make a choice to believe.
Sure, but I think that God had basically guaranteed the choice that Paul was going to make by his interference on the road to Damascus.
I'm guessing God had a good idea this was going to work out because there was a lot riding on Paul.
Maybe there was a guy before Paul named Bob.
Who did not.
Who was also persecuting.
He was the first choice.
Yes.
Paul was like the B team.
Exactly.
That's really sad.
Bob the Pharisee on the road to Damascus. Jesus appears to him and
like Jesus appeared on accident to Saul. Yes. He's like, wait, Bob, it's me. Wait, no. Oh, shoot. Sorry.
I mean, seriously, though, you could put that out there as a possible theory. If what you're saying, if you want to take what you're saying far enough, then you have to look at that as a possibility that there might have been someone before Paul that Jesus appeared to.
I'm comfortable with that. I don't see any problem with that because God can work with what happens.
Yes.
And people have to have free will. We have to choose love. We have to choose to love him. We can't be forced to love. Otherwise, let me say this. If we were forced and some were like called and made to love him, then he could have just made everybody love him, which would have solved the whole problem of hell and people having to suffer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying that Paul was made to love God, like God, you know, kind of tweaked his mind and all of a sudden it was perfectly that. What I'm saying is that God appeared to Paul, I believe, in such a way where Paul would not have made any other choice but to accept Jesus and to change the way that he was living. He appeared to him in such a way where it was a guaranteed outcome.
I've been studying, besides Calvinism and Arminianism, also open theism, like I said, and what they would say is that God, because he knows everybody so well, and he knew Saul so good, he knew the most likely choice Paul was going to make, although he didn't know precisely that was going to happen. He knew pretty sure that Paul was going to make that choice.
So are you arguing the open theist position?
I'm attracted to it right now, but I'm not set. I haven't chosen a side. We're going to talk about our views towards the end of the show, I think.
Yeah, we'll get to open theism in a minute because I think it's got some huge problems.
Okay, this will be fun then because we can really talk it out. Because open theism, let me just summarize that quickly. It's called open theism because it says the future is open. There isn't a set fate. And so because there is no future to see, God doesn't see it. So it's not saying God doesn't know everything. It's saying there is nothing there for God to see yet. So it kind of takes the idea that God is outside of time a little bit different than how it's typically seen, because it more puts God into time, I think. I think that would be maybe one problem.
That would be a pretty major problem.
But I like the idea. It'd be the same, what I've heard people say is it would be like there is no such thing as a square circle. So God can't make a square circle because it doesn't make any sense. So in the same way, God can't see the future because it just doesn't exist. That's their open theism. That's what they believe.
Yeah, you run into some pretty major biblical problems.
We should definitely talk it out later in the show. Or if,
unless well, let's do it now. I think it's relevant to what we're talking about with Paul.
Okay. For the sake of argument, even though I haven't, like I said, chosen my side, I will argue the side of open theism, and you try to fight me.
Okay. Well, I mean, basically, where I'd come down and say where the problems are is that the second you have put God inside of time, you have put him into a created thing. God is not subject to creation, and by doing that, you have limited his sovereignty in a pretty major way.
But you also believe, I know because we've talked outside of this taping, yes. that God has brought himself into this creation. When we talk about our theories or the things we've read about Genesis and him making his temple in the cosmos, you know, that some of the things we've read outside of the show.
Yeah, but there's a difference between God interacting inside of history with humanity and being bound by history. That's a huge, huge difference.
If he's bringing himself into our world, and we know even Jesus as man has come into our world, what's
well, the incarnation's an entirely different thing.
So let's just talk about God. Yeah. So God can still, he could still be outside of time, I think, and still not know what's going to happen, because if he, some people would argue that if he knew what was going to happen, there would be nothing that you or I could do about our future. It's set in stone.
I wouldn't agree with that.
I don't know if I really agree with that either.
Yeah.
But that's what they might argue.
I think it's a too simplistic and too either-or approach to the issue. I think that God is outside of time. He knows everything, but simply because he knows it does not mean that he has caused everything.
This is what I would, if I had my way, if I was going to tweak open theism, I would say that God can know what's going to happen in the future, because like him knowing what's going to happen doesn't make me do it. I still would make my choice even if God knew. It's just a fact he knows. Just like I know the sun's going to rise tomorrow, but I'm not making it happen by me knowing that. So I like the idea that God is outside time, but you can't argue with...
Okay, but with that tweak, you're no longer arguing open theism.
I know, but this is where I'm going to come back around.
Okay.
You can't argue with their thoughts that there are times where God appears to be surprised in the Bible. There's times where it seems like he's changed his mind. And so...
there's also verses that say flat out he doesn't change his mind.
But there are examples I can give you of him changing his mind.
There are examples of him interacting with humans in a way that we can relate with.
Let me ask you this. When right before he flooded the world...
Yes.
It said that he regretted making humans because they turned out so bad. So where does regret come from if you know what's going to happen? How could you regret something that you knew was inevitable?
I don't know.
Let me ask another question.
Yeah.
When, not Saul who became Paul, but Saul, the first king of Israel.
Yeah.
When he started out as king, he looked like a good guy. It looked like it was going to work out well. It turned out that he was bad. And right before David became king, God said, I regret that I made Saul king of Israel.
Yeah.
So you can't regret something if you know what's going to happen.
You can. You can. Because God knows, for example, that we're going to sin. He knows that we're going to sin, and he knows the sins. If he's outside time, he knows that that's going to take place. However, that doesn't mean that he's causing it. So these regrets can still take... You know, he can still regret things even if he knows them beforehand, because he isn't causing them to happen.
Well, then why wouldn't... Okay.
It's the same... To me, the open theist makes the same argument as the seven... Or same mistake as the seven-point Calvinist in believing that for God to be sovereign, he has to know every last thing that's taking place. You know, and if God knows every last thing that's taking place, then he is causing it. No, God can know everything that's taking place, and he can be outside of time and see all the things that are going to happen, but that doesn't mean that he is responsible for them or causing them. In the case of Saul, it's very evident that Israel pushed for a king before God was going to give them a king. That was not in God's plan to give them a king that soon. He allowed them to have a king, and that began a process that led to God regretting that decision, because it was not in his original plan to make that.
But he knew it was going to happen. You can't regret a decision that you know if you
but
know
he,
the
outcome. The decision was made as a result of him giving humans free will. And because humans used their free will in a way that went against his plan, that doesn't mean he didn't know it was going to happen, though.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. That let's talk back to Genesis. Yeah. That he decided to flood the world because humans used free will to become huge sinners. Okay. Yes. But he regretted, I think it's possibly King James, or one version says he repented of making them.
Let's use King James. Okay, we all know that's an accurate translation.
Let me look here. Yeah, it's King James. Never mind. Okay, so he
there goes that argument. No, burned down in flames.
He regretted. We can still say regretted. And
sure.
If you know something's going to happen, you could just try to prevent it. Why? Well, how could you regret something if you knew it was going
to
happen?
I think it's that God values free will to the point where he is willing to allow things to take place that he will cause him to regret certain decisions on our part. But even though he knows it's going to take place, he values that free will. And I think that we're still making the mistake of assuming that God's view of time is our view of time, and his way of interacting with time is similar to our way of interacting with time. It's not. And I think when it comes to open theism, how do you explain things like prophecy at that point? How do you explain, you know, God's plan throughout history that he guides the nation of Israel through history? He chooses Abraham, and he promises that, you know, Jesus will come from David's line. All these promises that are fulfilled, all the prophecies about Jesus do not make sense in an open theistic model.
Let me ask you another question. You said earlier that...
Are you just going to ignore that point?
You said earlier that God doesn't...
Okay, I'm going to chalk that one up as a win for me.
You said earlier that God doesn't change his mind.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember King Hezekiah?
Mm-hmm.
This is what the Lord says. Make arrangements because you are not going to live but die. This is to Hezekiah.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Okay, and then Hezekiah prayed, please don't kill me. So then God's like, I have heard your prayers and see your tears, so I will add 15 years to your life. That sounds like a mind change.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like God is interacting with humans. It could be a test of Hezekiah's
faith. If you're saying it's a test, then you're saying God's a liar. Because no, God said, make arrangements because you are not going to live. That's a fact. He's saying you are not going to live. So you're saying in order to test him, he was actually lying to him?
And you're saying that God was wrong.
I would rather say that God changed his mind than that God lies.
He's not lying.
He said, you are not going to live, but die. And then later he's like, never mind. I'll add 15 years to your life. That's a lie if you're saying that he knew all along that
nonsense.
He was...
Nonsense. You're talking about how God interacts with humans versus how he exists sovereignly.
If you're saying that God knew all along, I'm not really going to kill this guy, but I'm going to tell him I'm going to kill him just to test him, then that is a lie. That's a lie.
1 right? Samuel 15, 29.
Can you deny that is a lie?
1 Samuel 15:29. He who is the glory of Israel does not lie or change his mind, for he is not a human being that he should change his mind.
Okay, I mean, you're using a Bible verse, I'm using a Bible verse. We can fight against each other, but the point is, there is some sort of conflict here.
Sure, absolutely, and it doesn't perfectly resolve, and I'm more than willing to live in that tension. What I'm not willing to do is go the open theistic route of placing God inside of time and limiting his sovereignty as a result. However those two ideas resolve, and it says pretty clearly here that God does not change his mind, that he is immutable would be the theological term for it. I'm not saying
that... Define immutable?
That he doesn't change his mind.
Oh, is that what it meant? I thought you were saying something else.
No. However all this stuff resolves, and I'm more than willing to enter into theological tension. I think we have to for a lot of these because I don't think we get a perfect answer. However, I think that we make a mistake when, in an attempt to resolve all of this, we start doing things that limit God's sovereignty and make him less powerful than he is.
So do you think...
Open theism is heretical, honestly.
So how much of a problem would it be if we're saying future doesn't exist, so God can't see it?
That's a huge problem.
I'm not opposed to you thinking that, but can you talk it out a little bit more?
Well, it strips all meaning from biblical prophecy, first of all.
That is interesting. I know you talked about that earlier.
All the messianic prophecies. How did those have any meaning whatsoever?
I guess in a sense, one way that we show proof that Jesus is who he says he is by going back to the prophecies about him.
Yeah.
Which means that the future did exist.
Yeah.
And so if we are going to argue that God can't see this future, then how can we say humans could prophesy about it with God's power? Interesting.
Yes.
Like I said, I'm not attached to this theory, but I do think it's interesting.
Oh, it certainly is interesting to think about. I simply would argue that it goes outside the realm of biblical orthodoxy. The church has historically rejected it. I'm not saying that you and other open, you know, people who argue this position don't bring up some relevant points. I mean, certainly things like the Hezekiah passage or God's discussion with Lot or Abraham before destroying Sodom and Gomorrah.
Another one that came up is interesting is where right before Abraham sacrifices Isaac, or he's going to sacrifice him because he thinks God has asked him to.
Yeah.
Then God's like, wait, stop. Now I know you fear me. And the key there is now I know.
Well,
so he needed Abraham to do something, to know something. That's weird, right?
I think that a lot of this can be explained by understanding that what we're reading in the Bible is God coming down to a human level and interacting with us on our terms.
I just don't like it when, and I don't disagree with what you said, but I don't like it when people say it's because God is testing them.
But sometimes it is.
Okay, but if he's being tested, or if the people are being tested, that's one thing. But for God to tell a lie in order to test, that's something different. And I know the Bible clearly says God can't lie. I don't think God lies. But I don't know right now how to come to terms with those conflicts.
Yeah, I think you'd have to get into the whole hermeneutics of it and understand the genre that's taking place there and understand what the author's trying to describe, what the purpose of the story is.
Well, the Hezekiah story is a historical account, so that's the genre, history.
Yes, yes and no. It's also in a prophetic book. You know, and it's not necessarily history in the way that we think of history in the 20th century.
Okay.
You know, it's not necessarily Isaiah wasn't there dictating word for word what God was saying to Hezekiah is my only point. And
I think that's fair.
I think that you have to look at the purpose of that account. And I'm not saying that everything's going to perfectly resolve or that there aren't any outstanding issues. I don't think it does perfectly resolve because I think that ultimately what God says is, trust me on this. I've got this. I'm in control. I just think that when we start going down the road of limiting God's sovereignty, we're in some pretty dangerous waters at that point.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
If a parent gives a gun to their child, knowing that this child is going to shoot other kids,
yeah,
who is to blame, the child or the parents?
Well, now that's a problem for both open theists and non-open theists.
I'm not even necessarily arguing. Yeah. I'm trying to talk this out with you.
I think the analogy breaks down quite a bit when we're talking about the relationship between God and humans.
So, you see where I'm going with
that. Yeah, I totally see. Obviously. but then, you know, either the analogy holds up, and then we have to believe that God is morally held responsible for all human evil and all human sin, regardless of if Calvinism is true or open theism is true, or we say that it's a poor analogy because the relationship between God and humanity is radically different than the relationship between a human child and a human parent.
So either way, you say it's not a fair analogy?
Absolutely. I think you have to. I don't know how else you land unless you're willing to say God sins.
I know, it is weird. That's why I'm bringing these things up. Not necessarily because I really believe everything, but for the sake of our audience, the questions have to be asked.
Right, I'm totally on board with asking questions. Again, I think we've talked about this. Maybe we haven't in terms of different approaches to apologetics that... I would take a presuppositionalist approach that says I start with this set of presuppositions. One of my presuppositions would be that God is perfect. Mm-hmm. And so if we're throwing out an idea that would say God is not perfect, which is what taking that analogy does, mm-hmm. I'm going to reject it.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately it comes down to faith. That even if I land on, I can't explain it to you perfectly. I have to say my presuppositions say God is perfect. Therefore, even if I don't have a perfect explanation, I trust that one does exist.
Good.
If that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I think that makes a lot of sense. You can't start with, you know, I think you're talking about presupposition versus evidential. You can't start with, well, here's some biblical evidence. Now I'm going to try to build theology around it. You have to start with the core beliefs. And then if things don't make sense, I mean, to us initially, there is some way it makes sense. We just don't know, and I certainly don't know how some of these verses come together. But I'm not opposed to the idea of just trusting that as I work through it, either eventually I'll figure out how it comes to terms with what I already believe, or what is actually true, or even if I never figure it out, it doesn't make God any less awesome.
Yeah, totally. One of the interesting things I wanted to bring up in this discussion when we talk about where does, you know, how much in control is God's plan and how much in control is human will? And when we talk about just how the world exists, mm-hmm. the story of Pharaoh and the Exodus mm-hmm. is really, really interesting. And I didn't realize this until somebody had brought it up in my theology class a couple of weeks ago. And I researched this today, and it turns out that this is an accurate description, that there are a few places in the story where it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart.
Yes.
And Paul alludes to this in Romans 9, mm-hmm. which is one of the famous Calvinist passages.
Okay.
There are also a few places in the story where it says that Pharaoh hardened his own heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of times is like, it's almost exactly the same. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And so what I think we get when we read that story is exactly this tension we're talking about, that the Bible doesn't exactly draw a clear distinction between human will and God's will. What were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
I think that in terms of how we resolve the whole Calvinism-Arminianism thing, that's roughly where I land, is that I don't think we get an answer to where God's will ends and human will begins.
Really? So are you arguing that they're one and the same?
No. I'm arguing that it doesn't resolve based on the evidence we have been given.
So there's no way to know if what we want is really what we want or what God wants?
Well, I'm talking about in terms of the salvation decision.
Okay.
That I think that, you know, if you take the Arminianism position, you run into some texts that really back you up. God desires that all should be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 Peter 3:9 says that very explicitly. Well, if that's true, and it's entirely God's choice, and wouldn't everyone be saved, right? But then you run into things like Romans 9 that talk about how God hardens people's hearts, and Romans 9 seems to indicate pretty clearly that God, it's his choice, you know, and it says it pretty explicitly.
There is an aspect that, I mean, when they talk about being called and the predestination, talking the Calvinist,
yeah.
there are some strong arguments that you can't, if we're just looking at what the Bible says, there's certainly verses that say God calls certain people.
And that's my point, is that I cannot be a Calvinist, and I cannot be an Arminian.
Mm-hmm.
Where I land is that we don't get an answer, and that it's not entirely clear from the Bible where human will takes place in salvation and where God's will takes place. I think we're called to live in tension on the question.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this before, but that's similar. I believe that these two views have been around for a long, long, long time. If there was an answer, somebody would have been able to make one look very wrong by now.
Yeah.
There's obviously too many things in the Bible that back up both points, free will, predestination. I think it has to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Now, this concept of election is very biblical. I mean, certainly we know that God elects Israel. Let me give you a different spin on it than maybe what you've heard before.
Okay.
And I'm deriving this from reading the work of N.T. Wright, who everyone should check out because he's awesome.
Okay.
So N.T. Wright makes the argument that when, you know, we typically think of that Israel is God's people, and they're just kind of the only people God's worried about up until the time of Jesus, and then everything's available to the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
Not true, says N.T. Wright. He says that if you read the Abrahamic covenant carefully, Abraham is given a responsibility to bring this message to the entire world. Israel has a responsibility to share their election by telling other people about the grace available to them through God.
Mm-hmm.
They fail to do so. Jesus is sent, and he steps in and does what Israel was meant to do. And by his death and resurrection and the Great Commission, he does what Israel was always meant to do and then brings the message to the entire world. But that was always God's plan. So my take on this would be that the idea of election is not that there's a small set of people that God is the only ones God's interested in saving. My take on election would be this. God starts with a small set of people, and he gives them the responsibility to bring other people who are not currently of the elect into the fold.
Okay, so he does call some.
Yes.
But then those are then in turn to go and make disciples of the rest of the world.
Exactly, which is why when we were talking about unconditional election, I was thinking through that a little bit.
Okay.
Because that would say that election isn't unconditional. It is, in fact, the responsibility of the elect to make more elect, in a sense,
okay,
to bring more people into the fold.
That's interesting. And yeah. N.T. Wright backs this up with verse after verse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he doesn't. Some of that is my own thought based on what he's gone off of. But he certainly talks about the whole that Israel's call was to bring this message to the entire world, and they failed in that.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine if you just made something new up and all of a sudden we all have to, like, decide if we want to be Calvinist, Arminianist, or
Benist?
I was going to say, like, De Bono. How would you say De Bono?
De Bonis.
De Bonis?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know if I'm comfortable being a De Bonis.
I am.
Okay.
I'm good with it. So
there it is. A new theory here at the Sci-Fi Christian. This is a scoop.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, somebody should make have to develop it more. But
somebody should make a Wikipedia page for Debonis.
Debonis, yeah. I'm on board with the Debonis theory of election.
Interesting. Yes. Very, very interesting. So, I mean, that sounds good. I mean, I'm interested in reading some N.T. Wright. I never have, but you always talk about him.
Oh, he's
give our audience his best book, and then maybe I'll read it too.
I am currently reading What St. Paul Really Said, and it is phenomenal.
What St. Paul Really Said by N.T. Wright.
Yes.
So is that what you're recommending to me?
I recommend it. To me, it's probably, in terms of a good balance between deep and accessible of the stuff I've read, it's probably, you know, he's got some stuff that is meant to be really, really accessible, and it doesn't get quite as deep. So in terms of a good, if you're looking for something that really gets into the meat of his theology, but is still reasonably accessible, this book has been that so far.
Good. Ben, let's go back to God and his plan.
Yes.
What do you think? Does he have a plan for every little thing in our lives, or does he have an overarching plan?
I think it's more of an overarching plan. I don't think God's too concerned about whether I eat a bagel or have cereal for breakfast. Yeah. You know, but clearly Jeremiah talks about, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord." You know, God does have a plan for our lives. He has.
I want to argue that.
Okay.
Jeremiah 29:11, often quoted, often misquoted, I would say.
You know, I've heard those accusations, and I'm not entirely sure I agree.
Let me bring them up as I have my Bible already open to it.
Okay.
For thus, this is Jeremiah 29:10, just one verse early. For thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit you, and I will fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. He's talking to Israel here.
Yes.
For I know the plans I have for you, Israel. I added that. It just says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will hear you. You will seek me and you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations to all the places where I have driven you into exile. I just added that part.
Mm-hmm.
Declares the Lord, and I'll bring you back to the place from which I sent you into exile. Okay. So he clearly there is talking to Israel. So you and I both are studying this stuff in context. You have to take the scripture in context.
Oh, I'll take it in context, and I'll prove to you why it's legitimate to use it for everybody.
So you're saying this applies to everybody. Every single person.
No. Just listen. Because there's an eschatological connotation to that passage.
Okay.
In the sense that it's talking about not just Israel's return from exile in the sense of the people literally walking from Babylon back to Jerusalem. It's talking about their spiritual return to exile. Did you know that at the time of Jesus, most Jews would have considered the exile to not have ended?
No, I didn't know that.
That really changes the way you read something like that.
But you're just pulling. Where are you getting that from?
That's scholarship work. This is reflected in what N.T. Wright says. This is something Dr. Wise talked about the trip.
You and me are both in school right now. That's, yes. I've never heard that before.
I'll prove it to you. I'll go and find some resources and show it to you. But it was the overwhelming opinion, including of people like Paul, that the exile had not ended. This was the mindset of Judaism at the time of Jesus.
Okay.
Because they did not think of the exile in terms of literally coming back from to Jerusalem. It was more than that. The whole concept of exile and restoration has an eschatological connotation which is fulfilled in the person of Jesus Christ. Therefore, that verse is relevant for anybody who is among God's people and is brought back from spiritual exile through the person of Jesus Christ.
You often say when people misquote the Bible that it has to cut both ways. So how are you able to take this part and tie it into Israel and ultimately us, but not take... I mean, you could really do that to any verse and say, actually, it has this other meaning. You could do it to any verse.
Well, you have to prove it. And so, what I'm saying is that in what you just read, there is an eschatological connotation to what God is promising to Israel. It's not just promising that they get to come back from Babylon, as is talked about in Nehemiah. That's not the fulfillment of that verse.
Okay.
The fulfillment is in Jesus Christ. Of what's being talked about there.
Okay,
that is the return from exile for Israel.
So then for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare. Well, most people would say plans for hope in the future, plans to do good. You think that applies to every single individual person?
I think it applies to all of those who have been included in the covenant promises of Israel through the death and resurrection of Jesus.
So you're basically saying it applies to all Christians?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I really agree yet, but I'm open to that.
I'd have to develop the argument further, but I certainly, this much is very clear. that the idea of exile is far more than just the historical going to Babylon and coming back. That's very, very clear from studying Second Temple Judaism.
Okay.
The exile for them was not over when Nehemiah brought the exiles back and rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem.
I will need to see evidence of this.
Okay, I will show it because I just read it in NT Wright yesterday. Okay. So this is a common view in scholarship.
So then what happens to all the people that don't believe in God? Aren't Christians? So you're saying everybody that is a Christian has a plan. God has a good plan for them. And everybody that is not a Christian there's no plan.
God does God want everyone to become a Christian?
I would say yes.
Then he has a plan for them.
So the big picture is, I wouldn't argue that there's some things that God wants to have happen. But I think we're both on board that not everything in our lives there's a plan for.
Yeah, and we're not talking about to the minutia. We're talking about things like purpose.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about things like calling in life, whether that's a vocational ministry thing or something else. That God, God is interested in the choices we make in life. I mean, certainly you would agree with that.
Yes, I think he's interested in us.
So if God is concerned about the choices we make and we are called to seek his will in our life, and we are called in the Lord's Prayer to pray that his will be done on earth, that implies that he does have a plan and that we have a role as Christians in having that plan be carried out both in our lives and in the world around us.
Good. So we both agree that there's a big picture plan. Besides people becoming Christians, can you describe to our audience what you think are these plans that God has in mind?
I think God has purpose. I would say God called me into ministry. And I believe that it's God's plan for me as an individual to move forward right now with being discipleship pastor at Epic Life Church. I think that in terms of where I go in the future with ministry, God has other plans for that. It doesn't mean that there's this one small nitty-gritty track that's set in stone, and if I wander outside of that a little bit, God's not going to help redirect me and guide me and give me grace to, still make my life purposeful. But it does mean that we're not just floating through life, and that God does intend for us to live a purposeful life in accordance to his will.
Yeah, something I was thinking about in preparation for this is how when we know that there is some sort of plan, like for example, as Christians, we know that Christ followers there's ultimately a plan for us to become Christ-like, there is a plan for that. So when you know that there is some sort of plan, it gives a sense of significance. It makes you feel purposeful, like you said.
Yep.
And so that's that when it talks about giving you a hope, that is something that gives you hope, knowing that there is, even though maybe not everything is planned out, there is certain things that God has in mind for your life.
Yeah.
And like you said, ministry, that's something specific for you.
Yep.
But everybody else has, I think there are specific things for every person, maybe not every minute of the day, but there are certain things that God wants to have happen to you.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. So Matt, I got a couple questions for you to bring it back to the Adjustment Bureau a little bit.
Oh, thank you.
We've been mostly the Christian part of the sci-fi Christian tonight.
Well, we almost always go with the sci-fi.
Yeah, I know. So this has been a little bit different feel, but that's okay. Yeah. We got to get those shows in. One of the interesting things I found in the movie was when they're talking about why they adjust.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring up this whole issue that, we backed off. And
this will be minor spoiler. Yeah. It really doesn't matter, but go ahead.
So they say, we were guiding humanity through the height of the Roman Empire. We backed off and the Dark Ages happened.
Yeah.
Then we went back hands-on again from the Renaissance through the beginning of the 20th century. Then we backed off again and we had two world wars and the Cold War.
And almost nuclear warfare.
Yes.
And then they came back in to start adjusting again to stop nuclear warfare.
So here's my question for you.
Yeah.
We've both agreed that God does not control everything to the minutia, that he's not controlling every last action. Would it be better if he did?
I think it would have been better if he would have just made it differently from the start. But given the world that we live in, would it be better if he took care of every little thing? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel better. And like we said, in sci-fi, there's a tendency to rebel against it. And so as viewers, as readers, we want to rebel against Big Brother. So, but would it be better? It might be better. It might be better.
Then why didn't God do it that way?
I don't know why God did some of the things he chose.
That's a fair answer. And I think an appropriately humble one. But speculate for me anyway.
Well, speculate why? Well, can we go back to why didn't he do it that way in the first place?
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been nice. I mean, let's just take Hell, for example.
Yes.
I mean, there's some... He could have made the rules different right from the start to save billions of people from going to hell. So, and so here we are, stuck in this, in the rules that he's already made.
So God, it would have been better if he'd chosen different rules.
Yeah, I think so. But he knows better than me, so I'm just going to have to go with the flow.
I think maybe a better answer would be that it seems like it would be better, but it actually would not
exactly.
be. Yes.
It seems like it would be better, but I don't know as much as God, so I trust I trust his opinion.
But, God, we approve of your opinion.
Yeah, but sometimes to me it feels like, oh my gosh, seriously? A small number of people go to heaven when everybody else has to go to hell. It seems like it would have been nicer if there were some different rules, but he's God. And I know that he sees the big picture, so I know he knows best.
Yeah.
So given the world that we live in, a part of me thinks it would be fine if he took care of every little thing, if it was for our best, because then he could save everybody.
Yeah, but then freedom becomes an illusion.
I would rather, let me say this, and I'm interested to see what the listeners say. I would give up my freedom right now if everybody got to go to heaven. I don't care about free will if no one has to suffer forever. Mm-hmm. What do you think? I mean, what would you say to that?
No, because God designed us this way for a reason.
I know that. Okay, you're going back to that.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I agree. God designed us this way for a reason.
Yeah.
But just use your human mind.
Okay.
Don't use the big picture.
Would I be willing to sacrifice my free will to save everybody from hell?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, everybody would. Sure. I don't think there's a listener that wouldn't. I don't see how you could. So, this is a topic that I think is too deep to have an answer.
Yeah. So, one last sci-fi related question for you.
Okay.
We've talked about this tendency in sci-fi to rebel against predestination.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that predestination, the concept in and of itself, is unjust?
Predestination unjust? I hadn't thought about this. We've already said it feels unjust because it feels like there is a Big Brother character who...
Yes.
Not Big Brother, because they just watch. There's somebody who's controlling you to make you get to someplace that maybe you want to get to and maybe you don't. You don't know because you don't even get to choose. So not having a choice feels... It feels wrong, but I've already just argued that I would give up my choices for everybody, so I don't know.
Yeah. So does that feeling of it would be totally unjust for God to do this come as a result of our fallen nature?
Or maybe just what we've heard and learned and seen from all over media and whatnot?
I mean,
there's a strong... Everybody wants personal freedom, right now especially.
The reason I think it's relevant is because even though I'm not a Calvinist and I don't believe in this absolute predestination, sometimes the counter arguments I hear go along the lines of it would be wrong for God to do that. No, it wouldn't.
It would be wrong for God to...
To predestine everything and to do basically what Calvinism argues he does.
Okay.
And even though I don't agree with Calvinism, I think we have to be careful about saying that it would be wrong for God to do something.
Why do you
like
think
that.
It would not be wrong?
Because he's God.
Okay, so even though it sounds like a cop out, I think it's a fair argument. And even to my thing about, to me, it seems like it would have been nice with different rules so people didn't have to go to hell. Well, he's God. I know he gets it. I know he knows best. And
exactly.
So he's God. He can do it. He created us. He can create it however he knows his best.
Yeah, and my point would be that we don't have the right to tell God what he is and is not allowed to do.
I totally agree. And so, and really, that's the only thing, because I struggle with some of these questions, but the only thing that I can rest in is just trusting him, trusting his love, trusting his goodness. I don't want to be God. I don't want to make up these decisions. He obviously knows what's best.
Yeah. So, Matt, we started this whole topic with a phone call from Wayne, and we have one other call that came in about the Adjustment Bureau.
From Rick.
And this one does have spoilers. The call is a minute and a half long, so...
And it spoils the end.
It spoils the end of the movie. So we're going to play it because he's got some good things to say. But if you do not want to have the ending of the movie spoiled for you, flash forward 96 seconds from now.
Hi, this comment is for the Sci-Fi Christian Show. This is Rick Snowdy, also known as Rick from Wisconsin on Twitter. And I've seen both the movies that you mentioned in your latest episode. I actually have the opposite opinion of Matt on these ones. Adjustment Bureau was well done, but I was a little left hanging at the end because I just thought it was odd that this whole group of people had a job to correct things and make them happen supposedly a certain way. There was some great reason they had to happen a certain way, but then in the end they were able to still let him do what he wanted. They went back and looked in their books and saw that plans had changed at some point in time. I just don't understand that. As it plays into a theological argument, if there's only one universe and it's ours, then I guess whatever decision you make is the one God knew you were going to make. So I don't see how it could be changed to something else. On the subject of Battle Los Angeles, as a sci-fi movie, it wasn't a lot of sci-fi other than they're fighting the aliens. But if you think of it as Saving Private Ryan, only fighting the aliens instead of the Germans, I thought it was a pretty good movie. So that's where I found the value in that film, was in the story of the lead character. Thanks for your show.
So I haven't seen Battle Los Angeles, obviously. Does what he's saying make any sense to you?
Yeah. Cool. I mean, it did feel sci-fi-ish to me, like you said, because of the aliens and their ships and their weapons.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a war
movie. Well, you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, so I guess we're not able to comment on this. Is this comment too much? Because I haven't seen Battle Los Angeles. You haven't seen Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen war movies.
And shame on you for that, by the way.
I haven't seen a lot of war movies, but I've seen them. Yeah, it felt war movie-ish.
You need to watch Saving Private Ryan.
All right. I will someday. Promise.
Like, soon.
If it's God's will.
It's God's will, because it's an awesome movie.
Good.
And it's just inexcusable that you haven't seen it. But we're not the Saving Private Ryan Christian. We're the Sci-Fi Christian, and it's not a sci-fi movie. So we shouldn't talk about
it. Never, ever talk about it again.
We probably will never talk about it again. So should we move on to listener feedback?
Listener feedback.
It's a trap!
It's a trap!
It's a trap!
I was trying to do something new before I whisper it.
Well, it is kind of a trap this week, though.
What?
Because we're handling our listener feedback a bit differently.
What?
We talked about this before the show.
I was trying to add to the suspense.
Okay, so we got some really, really cool comments on our Clones episode.
Yeah, definitely. The Clones episode generated the most comments we've ever had.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but it generated the most interesting comments we've ever had.
Oh, that's sad. No, I think it is true.
Yeah, and that's not a slam against any other comments we've gotten. I just thought that the perspectives our listeners were bringing in to the show with their comments on the Clones episode were really, really excellent.
Yeah, and actually they brought up things that we didn't even think of until they brought it up, which makes me want to talk about it more.
Yes, and that's kind of what we're going to do. Because I looked at this and I said, there's no way we can respond to these in the listener feedback segment. Mm-hmm. There's too much good content here. You and I have thought of a couple different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So we're going Mythbusters style here.
Mythbusters?
Yes.
As in Revisited?
Revisited. Sometimes what the Mythbusters will do, if you're familiar with their show, is they will take a myth that they have tested. They'll get some listener feedback on it. The listeners will tell them a whole bunch of things they either got wrong or ignored, or different perspectives they need to take,
yeah,
and they'll go and retest the same myth.
Interesting.
We're going to do the same thing.
And in a pretty short amount of time, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think probably 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes.
I want to give people who maybe haven't heard the episode yet a chance to comment and a chance to send stuff in. But sometime in the next month, we are going to do our first Sci-Fi Christian revisit of the Clones episode.
Very good. And so, yeah, like Ben said, if you didn't comment yet,
yeah,
and you wish you had, do it, because we're dedicating a whole episode to listener feedback. So if you want to guarantee your voice on internet.
Yes.
On the internet, not just internet.
Yeah.
Call in 612-4121-SFC.
Absolutely. And I really want to encourage, even if you've already sent in a comment and you didn't know we were going to do this and you want to take a slightly different approach because we're going a little bit more full throttle with it, tell us where you think we're wrong. Tell us where we screwed up.
Tell us where Ben screwed up.
And especially where Matt screwed up. You know, just really, really tell us what you want us to look at differently.
Is it possible that Jesus' resurrection was a simple mind transfer to a new cloned Jesus body?
No.
Okay. I mean, that's not for you. That's for the listeners.
Okay. But I'm answering it. No.
What?
Jesus was not a zombie. Jesus was not a clone. Jesus was not anything else that you can think of.
And how else did he come back to life? Come back to life.
And Matt, I'm just going to say this right now on the air. We are not calling that episode Jesus Was a Clone.
Oh my god.
Or whatever you want to call it.
Should we talk about how we got into a fight over the zombie episode?
Oh.
When we did the zombie episode, I really wanted to call it What was it?
Was
Jesus a zombie? And you had a sharp disagreement with that.
Yes, I did.
So we finally compromised and we got to put zombie Jesus in parentheses.
Well, we called our friend Daniel and we agreed that whatever he said we would do. And he said it was not a problem, so we put it in parentheses.
Yeah, so thank you, Daniel. And
but we're not doing Was Jesus a Clone?
So, listeners, if you want that episode to be called Was Jesus a Clone?
No.
Feedback.
Not going to happen.
Feedback at scifichristianpodcast.com.
And I will ignore you.
So I can't wait to see how much response we get.
I will delete the email.
Ah, Ben, this has been a good episode.
It absolutely has.
It was similar to last week in which we asked some questions that we didn't have answers to.
Yeah.
And it was unsimilar to any week where we barely talked about sci-fi at all.
Yeah, we've had other weeks where we've talked about basically superheroes the whole time.
Yeah, so this is good. Obviously, you could probably tell from the way I talked about some things. Some of these things are things I'm mulling over right now in my own life. And when it comes down to it, I don't know the answers. I don't know why God did certain things, but I trust God. And nothing really would make me believe less. But I definitely like questioning things.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's good to really look into why you believe what you believe. And any questions that you have after you investigate, I believe it will ultimately lead you to truth, which is from God.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if it will always lead you to truth because our human reason is fallible.
I see. But when you do find truth, guess who's there?
God.
Correct.
Yes. But yeah, certainly good things to think about last week and this week, and keep thinking about last week and send in those emails and give us a call.
Was Jesus a clone? Find out in 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, he wasn't. You don't have to wait. We'll just answer that now.
Well, all that's right, all Matt. From here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians.
Signing off.